So, David, I'm curious. We've tested a whole variety of aircraft, right? But these uncrewed systems are a little different than conventional. Can you tell us how that's a challenge for testing?
It's a challenge for testing in a lot of ways because unmanned aircraft are sometimes more complicated to fly than a manned aircraft. And even some of the simple unmanned aircraft require more diligence and care than flying a manned aircraft. The human mind, the human brain is a great flight control computer, flight control system, has a lot of feedback systems in itself. So unmanned systems are a challenge because they have to be able to fly and have handling qualities equivalent to a manned aircraft without having that person in the loop feedback.
Okay. So Janet, I'm sure everybody's curious about, you did talk about this just a minute ago, but obviously we've got a secure comm network that enables this to happen. Can you tell us just a little bit more about that?
Well, secure communication is quite important. We have the same thing when we're talking to the spacecraft, so we don't want anybody to hack in. And so that's also something that it's a very important thing. Software, cybersecurity is a huge thing at the agency, and we want to make sure that our airspace is safe and from that kind of a hacking. I just want to kind of elaborate a little bit on what David mentioned earlier. We were talking about the terrain avoidance, and we are the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and believe it or not, there's a lot of transfer from one side to the other, and some of that's in materials, but with respect to the terrain avoidance, we actually had a mission several years ago where we mapped the Earth in very high resolution in three dimensions, and that information is now used in Google Maps and Google Earth, and that's also used in some of these databases, like the one Dave was mentioning, that you can use to provide heads-up displays or just information for the aircraft itself, so that if it detects that you are going to head into the ground or head into a mountain, it will take invasive maneuvers. And so that's one contribution where our efforts in space have really paid off for the ground communications as well.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great example of the crossover between the two areas. So Dave, just last question on this topic, or anybody can take a stab at this. There's a host of toys floating around that might qualify. So can you tell us what's not qualified as needed to be integrated in the air system? Maybe where do you draw the line, right?
Well, so we're working the UAS and the NASA, and that's really for the bigger platforms. But then we are doing a lot on smaller platforms. And David talked about some of the challenges. One of the challenges we found, I mean, literally, you can go out and buy little quadcopters at your local hobby store for a couple $100. So to develop these algorithms we've been talking about, sense and avoid, safe to fly, safe to ditch, things like that, getting an environment where you can accurately simulate where these vehicles might ultimately be applied has been one of the challenges we've been looking at. And a lot of the talk you hear with package delivery, other kinds of deliveries, are flying in urban environments. So we've kind of said, hey, I've got a little urban environment at the center there. I've got buildings, I've got people walking around. And so we've actually taken the campus on the field and turned it into a UAS for small UAS, Class D, Class G airspace. And are kind of using that to get a handle on everybody's just not out buying one of these things in a hobby shop and flying them around the center. So we're trying to get a handle on that. But it's also providing us an opportunity, fly a little bit, develop a little bit of technology, test it out, fly it, learn, and go through that iterative loop that's so important for the work we do.
Great. So yeah, we're gonna move on to the third area that we promised to talk about, which is low boom supersonic flight. I know that's one that anybody that's an aviation enthusiast is probably really excited about. I know I am. Since the retirement of the Concorde, right, we're all anticipating how does that come back. As probably everybody knows, one of the big business challenges of the Concorde was the sonic boom and its disruption. It was actually banned from flying over land, and in fact, most of our military aircraft are limited to certain operation zones flying supersonic. I heard at the symposium down at Langley last week, somebody made the point that NASA made a lot of progress in developing supersonic aircraft and technology, spent the last several decades making sonic booms. Now we're going to spend a decade or so making them quiet. So that's what we call job security, and we're really looking forward to doing that. as I said, this is one of the most challenging problems in aerodynamics, right, Tom? And I know Ames is directly working in the new X-plane we have coming online. Can you tell us a little bit about the aerodynamics behind and what's going on at Ames that help us to reduce it?
I would love to. This one is really near and dear to my heart because I worked on this 20 years ago. And I think there's about a 20-year period between which NASA works on this, and so we got the Concorde in the 70s. And then in the 90s, a very great interest commercially was generated in flying supersonically again. But again, this time, as you mentioned, with the overland prohibition was a market buster for the supersonic. So when we came back to it in the 90s, the emphasis was on getting approval to fly over land. Then that required manipulating the sonic boom so that it wasn't so objectionable. The technology wasn't ready at that time. And I was a computational guy, and we were making our first attempt to shape a supersonic airplane using computational methods to manipulate the sound that a supersonic aircraft makes. Not only the sound that a human ear hears, but the pressure pulse that can shake buildings and rattle windows mm-hmm. and even break windows, the things that are really highly objectionable. So we tried our hardest, and we didn't quite get there at the time, unfortunately, and so it went back on the shelf. Now, 20 years later, with a lot of new technology, faster computers, smarter engineers, we have now come up with some tools that tell us how to shape the aircraft so that the sonic boom is less objectionable. And then together with lots of other disciplines that come into play, the human auditory response that Langley works on and the flight testing and the propulsion that has to be super efficient, we've come to the point where we think a design closes both economically and from an environmental acceptability standpoint. And this is the first time that we think we've really finally got there, so that's why we said it's time to build an X-plane. And at Ames, we have one of the premier wind tunnel facilities that tests these. And so we build little supersonic aircraft about 12 inches long, and we put them in a wind tunnel at Mach 2 or 2.5. And we can actually get far enough away from that inside the wind tunnel to measure a sonic boom off of that little model. And so that's pretty good, although there are always errors when you're doing things at small scale and on the ground. So that's the imperative now, having proven as much as we can from the ground, the imperative is to get into flight.
That's really exciting. So we've actually been, there wasn't a break in supersonic aircraft testing. We've actually been doing that because we've got a unique facility out at Armstrong. Can you tell us a little bit more about the test range and what we're going to be doing for this next generation, Dave?
Yeah, well, to take off where Tom was, to get from that small model to a relevant scale vehicle that really looks at full Reynolds number and looks at real the real physics and propagation of sonic boom, we're working on a low boom supersonic demonstrator. This model here on the stage represents a vehicle that we just wrapped up preliminary design, the preliminary design review in June with Lockheed Martin on that vehicle. The contract will go out there. The request for proposals for the full-size, full-scale sonic boom demonstrator aircraft will hit the street next Tuesday, August 1st. Will be that. So all you aircraft builders out there, if you're into building a full-scale sonic boom demonstrator aircraft, look for that release on August 1st. The goal is to take that vehicle, and that doesn't represent the future of supersonic transport. That really is a sonic boom demonstrator to validate that at full scale we can make an aircraft fly supersonic, but have a shed of sonic boom or sonic waves that impact you and you perceive as acceptable, to get the feeling of a sonic boom from something that'll set off a car alarm or break a window to something that just sounds like rumble on the horizon, makes it acceptable to you. And we'll be testing humans. We'll be testing the American public with that vehicle more than we'll be testing the actual vehicle. The goal is to take that vehicle, once we open up the envelope and make it safe to fly supersonic, is to take it out to the country and boom communities and in the plains, in the mountains, in the desert, different environments, different terrains, different types of cities and farms and whatnot, and see how you, the American public, respond to those sonic booms. And so you, the public, are going to be our test subjects for that vehicle. If we can get an acceptable public response, that'll open up a whole market for the next generation of supersonic transport aircraft. this coming in 2 weeks, we'll be taking one of our high performance, or two of our high performance F-18s to Florida, and we'll be booming the community around the Kennedy Space Center. So if you live in the eastern Florida, over the next, from middle of August through September, we'll be booming the community to see how sonic booms propagate through, you know, we're used to doing our sonic booms in the dry desert. We want to see how, study how sonic booms propagate through a hot and humid environment, through swamps and different, and looking at that environment. So again, part of the sonic boom program is to test you, the public, not so much test the airplane, to see how you respond and if you're accepting, if you, and this is probably an easy audience to convince the supersonic booms are okay, but we want to get the general public to feel comfortable that sonic booms aren't annoying enough that you're right, your congressman, and say ban them. So if we can do it, we can really open up a market for supersonic transport for everybody.